Welcome to the show, Wish Upon a Star. I'm your host, Andell Banks. Wish Upon a Star is an exciting program that showcases up-and-coming stars in the musical, visual, performing, creative, and literary arts arenas. We will discuss with professional guests about songwriting, entertainment law, literary careers, copywriting, publishing, and other topics of importance in these highly competitive industries. It gives us great pleasure to introduce our special guest this week, Mr. James O. Pope Sr. His bio. It is said music is a language that is understood throughout the world, and our guest can attest to its infectious nature. Mr. Pope is a native of Goldsboro, North Carolina. He began his teaching career in the public school systems of North Carolina and Virginia. He earned his Bachelor of Science degree in music education from North Carolina A&T State University and a Master of Arts degree in music education from Morgan State University. He did his postgraduate work at the University of Maryland, College Park. As a well-liked music instructor, Mr. Pope has taught in Maryland public schools. Under his music leadership at the Gwen Falls Elementary School in Baltimore, Maryland, he organized the Gwen Falls Elementary Community Jazz Band and founded the Gwen Falls Elementary School Foundation. The jazz band has toured extensively, receiving many local and national awards in competition with rave reviews of outstanding performances. In his music legacy, he has performed with the North Carolina Symphony Orchestra at Greensboro, North Carolina, on French horn, and played substitute French horn for the Richmond Symphony Orchestra. He has performed with such artists as Rufus Thomas, the Dells, Little Willie John, and the Wilson Pickett Band, the Midnight Movers. Mr. Pope has received numerous recognitions, namely Teacher of the Year, Who's Who Among America's Teachers, and is past president of the Historical Arts Social Club. Mr. Pope currently resides in Baltimore, Maryland. Welcome to the show, Mr. Pope.
I am very happy to be a part of the show and wish upon a star. And I would like to say hello to all of my associates and constituents, my colleagues, and hello to my beautiful wife, Ina Banks, my children, who are out there listening, and just very happy to be here. And thank you, Anne, for choosing me.
You're quite welcome. All right, we're going to start our questioning period, and I think we're going to start from the very beginning. Here you are, little young James Pope. Our parents usually, Mr. Pope, know when a child has a gifted talent. When did you or your parents begin to recognize your musical ability?
My musical ability started in grade 3 on the drums. That I enjoyed very much. My father went to the music company and spent $50. We thought that was a lot of money on a drum. And the drum was so heavy that he had to bring it to school in order that I take music lessons.
Wow, that sounds interesting. And the drums, I know a lot of kids, I don't know if it's the noise or what, but they usually start on the drums. Were either of your parents or siblings musically inclined? And when did your personal training begin?
Well, everyone, including my mother, sisters, and brothers, and so forth, was musician to a certain level. My mother played violin, and my father played accordion. My sister and brothers took piano lessons, and I had one brother that played with Gene Chandler, the Isley Brothers, and the late Wilson Pickett. His name was Curtis Pope, and matter of fact, I think he's one of the only ones that are left in the old Wilson Pickett band. So we all play music in some way or another.
Oh, that's interesting. And it also made a great array for collaboration with your rest of your family. Being a firm believer, I see, in a strong education background, what other institutions of higher learning did you attend to more or less guide you in your musical path?
Well, let's see. Like I said, I went to North Carolina A&T State University, in which I received my bachelor's degree in music education. I attended Morgan State University, in which I received my master's of music education. And during that time, I did a lot of writing. I did a thesis over at Morgan, and the thesis was descriptive research. The name of the thesis was Inflexibilities Within the Schedules of Our, at that time it was junior high schools, in Baltimore City and Baltimore County, presented problems in scheduling instrumental music. Now, that thesis, scheduling instrumental music, at that time, and still is a problem, because there's no free time in the way the middle school curriculum in Baltimore City and Baltimore County set up. Students have to be taken out of general music classes, art, physical education, or some other classes in order to take music. And some schools have a very definite planned schedule, you know, for smaller groupings to enable them to advance as far as their skills and performance and abilities are concerned. The instrumental music teacher must know for his own security the techniques and fundamentals involved in the schedule-making process to enable him to effectively make suggestions to administrators of how to improve, you know, his present scheduling situation for instrumental music. Now, a description, you know, was given, you know, in that research of the present scheduling situations on the middle school level of Baltimore City and Baltimore County. And these areas are making attempts to rectify, you know, some of the scheduling inflexibilities that exist on the junior high or middle school level. Now, in a few middle schools, the principals have introduced inflexibilities, you know, which permitted band and orchestra sessions to be scheduled as often as 3 periods each week within the schools. Because of a variety of courses are being offered each year, the scheduling problems are becoming more complex. And various plans have been tried, you know, which are less successfully meet these difficulties. And, you know, we experimented with modular scheduling and similar flexible plans have been viewed as desirable alternatives by some administrators in the Baltimore City and Baltimore County. So we're still working on the scheduling problem and trying to come up with practical solutions for instrumental teachers and their scheduling problems in this research work in which I did. So hopefully that we can fit band or either the type of music classes, instrumental music, you know, into the schedule.
I know exactly what you're speaking of because I come from that period where I wanted to take the music classes, and I'm going to get into that subject before we go off the air with you as well. So that's a good thought. And we'll get back to that because it's very important to me as well. As a music educator, Mr. Pope, in public schools, how long did you stay in the system?
I remained in the system around 43 years.
Wow.
I started teaching even before I actually finished college. A principal came to me once upon a time and said, hey, I need an instrumental music teacher. And I said, well, I don't graduate until after I do my practice teaching. So they made arrangements that I left A&T without doing the practice teaching. But after I effectively taught 1 year, I got credit for it, and I received my diploma.
Oh.
Mm. I started school very young. I wasn't even 21 when I finished. My mother had to sign the contract in order that I was able to teach. So I've been in music a long time. I started out in high school, and I was the school was consolidated. I first started teaching. That was in Warsaw, North Carolina. And like I said, the grades was consolidated from kindergarten through grade 12. And that was an experience I never encountered. But everything went well. I ended up with a 100-piece band, marching band. Mm. So it kept me off of the draft board for a while.
That's excellent. And that is really a tremendous legacy for the school system. So we have had the pleasure of your excellent musical teaching for a long period of time. Why did you choose to stay in the field?
I fell in love with the children.
Okay.
I fell in love with teaching the children the jazz band. And that really did it when I got the jazz band going because got a lot of compliments. I think the public saw something they hadn't seen, I guess they'd never seen, children playing jazz and playing that type of music, playing music by Duke Earl Ellington, Cannonball Adderley, and all sorts of jazz compositions and actually reading music. I attended a festival in Myrtle Beach. And the judges did not believe children that young from grade 3 through 5 could, you know, was actually reading the music.
Mm-hmm.
But the judge came to the stage and took a look at the music composition, and all he could do was shake his head. And I think at Myrtle Beach, they started kids in the 6th grade, and I even had a couple of 2nd grade students up there playing. And they just couldn't believe their eyes.
But that's wonderful, and that's what we need more of. What was your major instrument of choice as an undergraduate, and why did you choose that particular instrument?
Well, as you know, at first I started on drums.
Yeah.
And I went to trumpet. Over a period of time, I think by the time I was in the 10th grade, I started focusing on what do I want to be in life. And when nothing interests me but music, I admired my music teacher, and I wanted to go to college and major in music and be like him. So he said, well, but my mother and father did not have the money to send me. So he said, well, if you played an instrument like French horn, oboe, bassoon, some of the odd instruments, you still have a chance of getting a scholarship in music. So that's what I did. I grabbed a French horn, which was one of the hardest instruments. It was really challenging. So I played the French horn in an audition at North Carolina A&T, and I received a four-year scholarship in music education. And my major instrument was the French horn.
Excellent. I know you have explained to us what you did with the youth band, but as a great music instructor, a great musician, and a collaborator, what were the things that was so unique about your elementary music education? What was so unique about the program?
Well, first of all, the program, we played in just about, a lot of places in Baltimore City. A lot of the hotels, when people had special activities going on, at the Hyatt Regency, Renaissance Hotel in Hilton, and we played at the School Board of Education when they had, you know, special activities going over there. And just about everywhere there was something going on. At the Forum, Martin West, we played just about everywhere. And people were amazed, you know, to see that type of band, a jazz band. And if you look on the front row, you would see alto saxophones, tenor saxophones, and a baritone sax. And when you look on the second row, you would see the trombone section, tenor trombones, all the way to the bass trombone. And when you look on the third way, you would see the trumpets back there standing, and you would see trumpets, flugelhorns, and the whole nine yards. And when you look over to the percussion section, you would see the piano, the guitar, lead guitar, bass guitar, the whole nine yards. And when you see those little children, you say, oh, they can't do it. But when you hear the first couple of notes, everybody just stop and they listen. The silence was so amazing. Nobody ever thought those kids could play Duke Ellington's music. Really nice. And we even had a little singer that was singing Aretha Franklin tunes. So it was amazing to see.
That is wonderful, and I have heard your band, and I can certainly attest to that fact. I know you spoke about the band. As a founding director of the Gwen Falls Elementary Jazz Band, did you have a tune repertoire? Like, what were some of the tunes that you actually, people loved, that you played by the big band musicians?
Well, we played some top 40 tunes, some Michael Jackson tunes, and you know, played some good arrangements of those tunes. We played you know, popular tunes such as like Georgia on My Mind. We played a lot of tunes in the 60s like by the Drifters, My Girl by the Impressions. You would just sit back and enjoy.
Oh, that's wonderful. All right, what we're going to do is take a little break here. We should be back in 30 seconds. Welcome back. This is Wish Upon a Star. I'm your host, Andell Banks. We have as our guest today, musician, director of jazz band, Mr. James O. Pope, Sr. And we also ask that you please give us your comments and suggestions. You can send them to an email, musicradio34@gmail.com. We are broadcasting on www.musicradio34.com. BBSRadio.com, Station 2. To continue our conversation with Mr. Pope, as founder of the Gwens Falls Elementary Jazz Band, I know you also had to service our country in the military. Were you able to have the opportunity to put your musical skills to use while in the military?
Yes, I did. I enjoyed the military also. I spent from 1970 to 1976 in the military. Now, I spent 2 years active service, and the other remaining service to my country was in reserve. And the good thing about it is that not only were I in the military, I was in the United States Army Band.
Oh, okay.
And that was really a treat because I got a chance to play for Miss America and do a lot of parades and a lot of concerts, you know, throughout the country. And I really, really enjoyed. Really enjoyed. And at that time, I had... I managed to come home frequently. Never had to go overseas, but I would come home. Matter of fact, I had a little band that I had that my brother had organized, called the Estevons and the Soul Explosions.
Oh,
and that was really a treat because I got a chance to continue to work at home and in the military. And matter of fact, those children really could play too. I started those kids early in the ball game, and I worked over at Clifton Park, and found a lot of children that actually became very good musicians later on in life, and some are still playing. I had one young man that ended up playing with. Playing professionally, and I had a young lady that ended up playing with Wilson Pickett, playing the bass guitar. And I had, like you say, quite a few students that became professional musicians in life. But, my brother, Baltimore brother, that was Roy Pope, now he has a church. And matter of fact, he's a bishop, Bishop Roy Pope. He has a church over at in Cadenville, and you know, that, like you say, we never thought he would become a bishop, but hey, he's doing the job. That's 164 Wesley Avenue in Cadenville. Come by sometime, and you'll see me over there playing the piano and playing the organ.
That's excellent.
That's my way of giving back to the community, I guess.
Right. You can mention as many things as you wish because the show is an hour long. So this will give you an opportunity to let our listeners know those kinds of things that you need to know and how do you get started in trying to create a musical legacy, which we really need. Mr. Pope, you are a well-known as being a positive community role model. What are some of the organizations you are affiliated with?
Oh, boy. Well, first of all, first thing I wanted to do was give back to the community. And in order to do so, what better way of, belonging to organizations? I'm the president of the Rosa Pryor Music Scholarship Fund, and I guess mostly everybody knows what that's all about. We raise money during the year, and we give children scholarships. We give kids scholarships in music. And we just had a wonderful program over at the Forum about 2 or 3 weeks ago in which we gave about 5 kids scholarships in music education. And they have a choice. They could spend the music on an instrument or go to college or whatever they wanted to do. I also belong to the Masons I'm a 33rd degree Master Mason, and I belong to the Most Worshipful Merlin Grand Lodge, and I was also the Grand Master there for a few years. And that's another helping organization. We help the community, and especially during this type of time of year, we give out all types of help to the community. And I belong to the Arch Social Club, which is another helping organization. And we all, every time we turn around, we're giving something to the community. Shoes. Sometimes we help fund programs over there. I was the vice president of that organization for 10 years. I've been a member of the Arch Social Club about 30 years. So that's another organization in which I belong. I'm a member of the Ames Memorial Church, Memorial United Methodist Church, over there on Carey and Baker Street under the direction of the Reverend Rodney Hudson. And I also go attend my brother's church, which is Spirit and Truth. And you ought to come over there, and we have a good time over there. You ought to come over there and visit that church sometime. And it's a small in number, but those people really work. Matter of fact, that church celebrated its anniversary and paid off a 15-year loan in 2 years.
That's wonderful.
So I don't charge them any money to play piano and organ. I go over there and I have my college roommate and lifetime friend, Mr. Lorenzo Thornton, is a member over there. As a matter of fact, he plays, he's a music teacher too, a former music teacher, and he plays along with me. So we just have fun and really enjoy. I'm also a member of the Gwynn Falls Elementary School Foundation Incorporated.
Mm-hmm.
We raise money for the children over there. We buy musical supplies and things that the school normally could not afford. We send the children on trips and all that kind of good stuff and do things that the school ordinarily, it's a 501c3 organization, and parents make contributions, you know, and parents and friends make contributions toward that organization. And like I said, you know, it's tax exempt. Every penny that you spend, you can get back on your taxes. So does the Rosa Pryor Music Scholarship Fund. So we just, you know, that's my way of giving back to the community. I belong to community organizations, and I was received awards from the Hamlin organization over there by Gwynn Falls, in the Gwynn Falls area. Hilltop Association over here in Woodlawn, where I live, and just a slew of things I've done in order to give back to the community.
That's excellent. And I know our youth really benefit from all that you have done. Again, I don't know how you get the students' instruments. I know years ago the school would take care of it, but I know they are crying no funding. So how do you get the instruments for the students in the schools?
Let's go back a few years. You know, I came to the Gwynn Falls elementary school situation back in 96. And I was on the way to retirement. I said, well, I have enough years in, so I may as well retire.
Uh-huh.
And I talked to music teachers because I never taught on the elementary level before. And I got a chance to teach. I got a chance to talk to people that did teach in the elementary level. And I said, what's to be expected? How do you get instrument? Do the kids play instrument? I asked all those questions conversational. I was told, I said, no, I said, man, go and retire, ease out the system, give them some plastic flutes, play London Bridge, and the purse will stand and give you a standing ovation. That's all you need to do. That's all that's expected of children on their level. So, you know, I experimented a little bit around with the children. You know, you get to know them, they ask questions. And so when I experimented around with those children, I learned that those children could play an instrument. So then I asked, you know, do some of the people that had been at that school quite a while, do we have any instruments, real band instruments? They said, no, we don't have nothing like that. I think one time somebody bought a few trumpets or something, but they were in the boiler room. They corroded and did. So I had a principal at that time named Miss Octavia Johnson, and I talked to her about it. I said, she said, well, Mr. Pope, we just don't have the money. She said, how much is a package of instruments? I said, well, you're talking about $80,000. Oh, no, we didn't have that kind of money. So I went everywhere. I went to the school board of education. I went to the banks in the area. One bank was Crestar Bank. I asked the parents, and I did receive some instruments. And those instruments was donated, and some of them fell apart in my hand because they were so old and corroded in the basement. So we needed new instruments. So I asked Crestar Bank, and Crestar Bank was a bank that there was a teacher by the name of Miss Boston at Gwynn Falls Elementary School. She was a very active person, and somehow or another she got that bank involved in our situation. Sometimes $2,000 or $3,000. They helped the library too, and it was really very helpful in our situation. So I wrote a letter to the president of the Maryland region, and they gave us all kinds of help, all kinds of money to purchase instruments, and not only purchase instruments, but purchased, you know, textbooks. And so I did. I asked for the Silver Bidette collection of musical textbooks and CDs from kindergarten all the way up to grade 5. Because at that time I didn't only teach instrumental music, I taught music education. We call it descriptive music now. And they gave us $5,000.
Now, what was it that gave you the $5,000?
Which we use for instruments. And we got it started that way. So later on down the line, I wrote a grant. And the grant became so popular that we used that grant throughout the school system. And what happened, I came home one day, my wife told me something about a grant she saw on TV. And the grant, I ended up getting another $80,000 worth of instruments. And matter of fact, the whole school system began to use that grant to get instruments into other schools. But anyway, once I got that kind of money and started working with those kids, I think I got that grant I wrote the grant in 1999, and it came through in the year 2000. And when it came through, I think I worked with those kids, I guess about 7 or 8 months, and we played our first festival. I asked the principal at that time, the administrator was Miss Octavia Johnson. I said, "What kind of band do you want? Do you want a marching band? Do you want elementary concert band? Either elementary jazz band?" She said, "Oh, I want a jazz band." Oh, she was very jubilant. She wanted a jazz band, and I produced it for her. And boy, that thing really took off. the whole concept did. Other elementary schools, they, you know, tried to do it, and I know the middle schools tried to do it, but it really took, the concept really took off. So that's how the jazz band got started.
That's excellent. What we're going to do is take a break, and I think we're going to take a minute break this time, because I really want to get back to that conversation that you just finished elaborating on. How mm-hmm. can people actually get people interested in their community back into the arts? Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back in 1 minute. Welcome back. This is Wish Upon a Star, and I'm your host, Andell Banks. We certainly appreciate you listening to the program. Our special guest this week is Mr. James O. Pope Sr., musician, music educator, and founder and director of the Youth Jazz Band. Please, for any comments, contact us on line at email to musicradio34@gmail.com. Again, any comments and suggestions, please send them through email to musicradio34@gmail.com. Mr. Pope, I'd like to reiterate what you had just finished talking to, which I consider to be extremely important, and our listeners might also think so, since we want to inform people how we can get our young youth into some activities. If I'm not mistaken, you said the best way to try to do that, if you don't have that money on hand, is to look for grants. Look for getting help from the community by involving them in any project you may want. Go to banks that are in the neighborhood. Ask them for help. Involve the parents. If the parents have a child that has gifted music talent, get them involved in trying to get a music program. And, of course, the number one thing, if you're in the city or county, go to your board of education. That is absolutely great. Thank you for that information. What we want to continue with, I think we probably covered it, but I want to say, what is your opinion, Mr. Pope? Many of our kids today do not have the advantage of fine arts introduction training. Do you have an opinion as to the importance of putting the arts back into the public schools?
You know, in many schools such as Princeton, some of the top 10 schools in the nation, they not only evaluate children that are students that are only, you know, working with the main subject matter, such as, you know, math and science.
Right.
In other words, if you're not a well-rounded student, you're not going to get into those Ivy League schools.
Would you repeat that, please?
If you're not a well-rounded student, you will not be able to, you will not be successful in entering these top Ivy League schools out here. Now, you might have the SAT advantage, but if you don't, like you say, work with some of these fine arts courses such as music and music and literature and all this kind of, you're not going to get into, you know, these schools that want a well-rounded student. So that's where music comes in great. What can you offer the school? Can you be in the school band? Can you play sports? Can you do this or can you do that? So as you see these large band with 300 and 400 children in, well, hey, they're serving the school. They're well-rounded. But now, in working with students and so forth and trying to draw some of the better students, you know, in the program, you must have goals. Now, my goal was to gain professional knowledge, you know, as a teacher regarding music, arts education, and current trends in teaching descriptive and instrumental music. When I say descriptive music, I'm talking about music education, such as singing, dancing, playing instruments, and this type of thing. One of the things I would critique myself, sometimes I would ask myself, how do you see your position in realizing our school's vision, you know, and the master plan? You know, not only did I have one goal, I had several goals. My position as a music resource teacher at Gwynn Falls was that all young people would have equal access, you know, to the current curriculum of materials and strategies. That means I would teach, didn't matter whether you was in special education or where you was normal or where you was gifted and talented. I gave all the children a chance, you know, to take music, take a band instrument. And I was committed to do that. And not only that, I was committed to be the school 95% of the time. I believe that music should be provided to all children, including students with special needs. And our students, you know, we provided, you know, for musical experiences that allowed them to become actively involved in all aspects, you know, of the learning. And another question I would ask myself, you know, how are you going to exist in ensuring successful achievement for the students you teach? And my assistance in ensuring successful achievement to our students were, number one, 95% attendance. Number two, hands-on learning. Number three, to provide a well-organized teaching area by using the space provided to its fullest advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, okay, I was once upon a time, the jazz band played, and you know, in front of the body, you know, and we had nothing but music teachers around, and they just sit by down, and we had one of our meetings. We were listening. So one of the questions that I long remember is that, what kind of band room do you have? I said, I don't have a band room. I guess when they saw the band, they said, oh, this guy has a state-of-the-arts band room. I didn't have a band room. I had a chalkboard. I was in the gymnasium. That was the only space that I could teach, and I had a chalkboard. I didn't have all these new things that you see in the state-of-the-arts band room.
Mm-hmm.
But I made, you know, it was a beautiful teacher. I made it a teaching area by using the space that was provided to its fullest advantage. And hey, that's where we came from. And then number four was to individualize instruction, and we had different types of cooperative learning and all this kind of thing, where the student could ask a question and demonstrate. Think pair, you know, sharing groups. Maybe the child could maybe grab another instrument and try to play it. We had all type of learning, you know, encouragement. Another question I would ask myself, what challenges do you face as you begin to yield instruction of your students? And the challenges I faced during that time was to provide high quality musical program without the appropriate and equitable tools to meet the instruction and needs of the students. And matter of fact, I encouraged the children to obtain, I was encouraged to obtain discography and audiovisual materials to support the instruction of progress. You know, all these kind of things that I had to do on my own. And in other words, the next question would have been, how do I expect to meet these challenges? Well, in order to meet the above challenges, I plan to talk with the regional superintendent concerning the problem. I wrote letters and anything in my power to do. So that's how I came to having a good program. And matter of fact, another question I would ask myself, I would actually ask myself this question. How do you document the growth of your children, of the children you teach? Well, how I did that, I had to document their growth. Number one, the students were given repeated opportunities to engage in a variety of assessments and pre-test, post-test, and all that kind of thing we did. But testing was not the primary, situation. So, these are the kind of things I did in order to, support the school focus in those areas. So this is how we came about, with a smooth program in teaching instrumental music. And it worked.
Matter of fact, you've already gone into the next question that I was going mm-hmm. to ask. All of these ideas and like you said, goals that you've given, we need to make a list of this. So what you were saying was you have to make an assessment factor of the class that you're teaching. Document their growth. Make sure you give high-quality instruction. Just because they're young people, you still want them to know that it's quality that you should work with.
Absolutely.
If you don't have the space, find a space and make it work. Make a goal, plan mm-hmm. action, and know what the challenges of the future could be. So my question was, when you've given that answer, was what are some of the valuable tips to our listeners looking to be successful not only as a musician, but maybe a teacher or starting a youth band project? And I think that listing that you just gave was really wonderful, and we really need to repeat that. And we're going to do that when we return. We're going to take another break, and the break will be 30 seconds, and we will return. This is Wish Upon a Star, and welcome back. We have our guest today, exciting program and very informative, Mr. James O. Polk Sr., musician, educator, and founder of a youth band. This program can also be listened to in the archives. Wish Upon a Star, broadcasting on bbsradio.com, station 2. As we continue, Mr. Pope, I would like to repeat a lot of that. And if I don't even say all of them, I want you to break in and tell me. We want to let our listeners know that according to the question that we had left with was, what are some of your valuable tips to our listeners looking to be successful as a musician or even maybe teaching or starting a youth band project? You started off by saying that they could look for grants. Everywhere you can see a grant for music, make sure you have community involvement. Go to the banks in your neighborhood. Ask them for contributions. Make sure you involve the parents, whether the kids are involved in music or if they have some kind of educational development. They still should be into the arts. And, of course, contact your school board of education in the community. If you get the program, you said, Mr. Pope, which I thought was extremely great, make sure you know what the challenges of the future are for the student and for the program. Make goals and plan of action for your program. Make sure you give high-quality instruction. Document the student's growth. And make an assessment of yourself as well as the class. Can you elaborate even more on the beauty of knowing how to be a well-rounded person in the arts?
Well, the advantages of such a program far outweigh the disadvantages.
Excellent. Mm-hmm.
The students, I used to work with the children in groups, and I would work with them in you know, several kinds of groups, especially instrumental classes. I had a Hertha Genius group, and I would in some situations I would have homogeneous groups. Now, my Hertha Genius classes had to do with the teaching of one family of instruments at the time. For instance, you know, everybody's not going to be playing this and that. Your groups are going to be mixed up. So strings and woodwinds, you know, which is most, you know, preferable. My strings would be the violin and, you know, the string instruments. My woodwinds would be something like the clarinet, saxophone. And I would use those in, you know, different groupings. And the music office, you know, always makes recommendations and suggests various approaches. And the administration of a local school determines the emphasis to be placed on instrumental music, you know, scheduling along, you know, what I'm saying. In other words, one day I might teach all percussions, that's the drums and so forth. Another day I might teach brass instruments, and that way the brass instruments would get my attention. And then the next day I might teach the woodwinds. You know, I would have those, you know, classes, you know, like that. Sometimes the students would be identified and placed on a particular day and then rotated through 7 periods. There's a way I can get around the scheduling situation, resulting in a student not missing more than one class every 35, you know, periods in an academic year. And, you know, say for instance, if I had been the first period one day, I might would have the same group. If I were the same group, I would probably pull from another time during the school day. Then that way I wouldn't beat on the same day all the time. There's always a way that this can be done. So that's, you know, the best thing to do is think through the problem. And there's always going to be a problem anytime you teach, you know, that many students at one time.
Right. Also, on a little ending note, sometimes music and the nightlife seem to go hand in hand. Have you ever tried your involvement in this area?
Yes, I did. At one time, I even had the nerve to open up a nightclub.
Woo-hoo!
And then I, you know, as a musician, you know, playing different places, and when I did the classical scene, I said, let me work a little bit more with the jazz scene, you know, and
mm-hmm.
And if I went to a nighttime adult entertainment, sometimes, I get tired of disco all the time and all that kind. I said, I want to hear, you know, some adult entertainment such as bands and comic, you know, comedians and all that good stuff. And so I said, well, I felt, you know, one night I was on the way back home, you know, from University of Maryland, and I was talking to an owner of a nightclub, and he made I was asking all sorts of things about how to run a club and this. He said, are you interested? I said, I don't know. He said, well, I want to sell my club. And I ended up buying the club.
Oh, wow. That's great. What do you think?
My brother and I ran it together. We enjoyed ourselves. We ran it for a while until we finally gave it up. So that's what happened. We bought the Sunrise Social Club, and we ran that for a while, and we had a good cross-section of people. The professionals from the law department, Social Security. We had people from the Board of Education would come, and we just had a good time, and it was clean, professional entertainment.
Oh, excellent. On a ending note, what do you think about the music industry as a whole today?
Well, it's very interesting. You know, I'm still trying to catch on to the rap. But I can't understand what they're talking about. But, you know, I still love jazz, and there are certain places you can go to hear that kind of thing. I love musicals, and I think the musical interest is really, really there, you know. I still like my Oldie But Goodies. So I think it's coming along.
Okay, great. Want to say my sincerest thanks to you for being on the program. And if our listeners have any questions, can they somehow get in touch with you?
Absolutely. Matter of fact, you can give them my telephone number.
You can say it yourself.
Okay, that's 410-944-8147. 410-944-8147.
Thank you ever so much. And we're going to say bye to you, and I'll be talking to you again probably in the future.
As a matter of fact, I'm going to say that I am giving private lessons. And the private lessons are taking place at 164 Wesley Avenue, Spirit and Truth Worship Center.
And where is that?
In Catonsville, right off of Winters Lane.
And what instrument?
All instruments.
Oh, okay. And the address again is?
164 Wesley Avenue, and that's off of Winters Lane in Catonsville, Maryland.
And they can call you as to times and costs.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Pope, and may you have a blessed week.
Thank you. And happy Thanksgiving to all.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Andel saying thank you for listening to Wish Upon a Star, broadcasting on BBSRadio.com, Station 2. This is Andel, your host, and Denise Banks, our coordinator, saying, keep reaching for the stars.